Darty. We're here with Alicia Wilson on Center Maryland's The Conference Call. Welcome, Alicia.
Thank you so much, Damian. This is really a pleasure for me to be with you.
You know, I've been around Baltimore and I've been around the healthcare industry enough that I can't afford to mess up your title here with Johns Hopkins. And so I'd love you to give us your formal title just so people understand that, and then talk a little bit about your role.
Sure. I'm the Vice President for Economic Development for Johns Hopkins University and Johns Hopkins Health System. And my role is really to maximize the economic opportunities for the communities, the vendors, both locally, state, and regionally, that we are able to create as an anchor institution. So, you know, we're a driver of employment. We're a driver in the healthcare space. We are a driver within the consumption of goods and services. And so how can we ensure that our economic activity inures to the benefit of the communities that we have closest around us, which are both our employees and those who live in proximity to us, but also the state, the region, the nation, and in many respects now the world, with the work that we're doing.
So talk to me about what that role looks like day to day. I mean, every time I see you talking about Hopkins, the word or hashtag local is, it's almost like a badge that you wear everywhere you go. But talk to me about what that day-to-day experience is like from an executive. My understanding is you have a role to play on the medicine side and the university side, which is pretty rare.
Yes.
Love to hear more about your approach in that respect.
Yeah, in many ways, I'm sort of like connective tissue that is across the enterprise. And so if you think about the university and the health system sort of occupy separate spaces, while externally everyone sees one Hopkins, they are two separate entities. My work is really to really think about what are we externally and internally as one Hopkins. On a day-to-day basis, it really involves a couple of key areas. One, definitely our hiring, our HR work. How are we hiring locally? And to your point, I do wear the badge of local. I have my Orioles shirt on.
Right.
I have a Ravens on if it was a different time of year. But what are we doing in terms of hiring from our local community? Whether we are in Baltimore, we're in Howard County, we are in suburban Montgomery County, we are in DC, we're in Florida, how are we being local in our work? Our procurement, how are we buying locally? How are we investing locally? So investing with money managers of color, but also money managers that are local. How do we look at our construction and our design construction? How are we local in that respect? And then how do we also, even when we don't have a direct stake in the matter, how are we using our work to be placed, you know, demonstrating that place matters? So whether it be our work in EBDI, which is the East Baltimore Development Initiative, or our work in the Homewood Community Partners Initiative, and then just thinking through our real estate place. So how are we catalytic when we come into a community? So if Hopkins is setting up a community physicians facility or some other healthcare entity, how do we show up in the community and how do we add value to those neighborhoods? So that's a lot of what is on my plate every day. COVID has, of course, enhanced my job description rather than changed it. And so now, you know, it's through the lens of COVID and through the lens of how do we continue to rev and be additive even in a time where we're physically distanced.
You know, it is a colleague-based environment. You got an amazing president there, but you have so many stakeholders. You know, I wonder how you've been so successful at bringing all those people together to get them to focus on these incredible things. And when you've, you know, you got to feel a little bit like you were with the moment or ahead of the moment. And now you may, I hope, have even more wind at your back. What's your take there? I think that was three questions in one, so you're allowed to answer any way you want.
Good question. You know, when I first came to Hopkins, I was saying this earlier today, I felt like I was supercharged to meet all these people. I felt like this battery in my back to say, you need to meet everyone you can within Hopkins. You need to figure out what people do, how they're contributing both to the institution, but also out in the community. And I couldn't figure out why was I pressing so hard? Why was I running so hard? And what I didn't realize was I was preparing for the day when I would no longer be able to do that. And I would need to know where, in many respects, the chess pieces were on the board so that I could deploy them and utilize them and draw on them to really deliver in our community. And so, you know, I think that the blessing that I've had is coming into Hopkins, you know, with a little, you know, with some credibility with respect to sort of building systems and working in community and driving outcomes. I had the support of leadership. And so if I didn't have Ron Daniels and Kevin Sollers and Paul Rothman and a whole host of other leaders, you know, really supporting me in this work, it wouldn't get done. But really being able to see the richness and the breadth and the depth of that team that is at Hopkins early on allowed for me to sort of be able to pivot once we got into COVID and I couldn't run down the hall or go to East Baltimore to meet them. I was able to realize the gems we had internally that I could sort of turn on to get this work done.
You know, I'm going to put this as I feel only I can and hope not to get you into trouble with it. But
there are
two institutions. There's just, you know, there's sort of like two things that matter most in Maryland, and it's the Chesapeake Bay and Dr. Freeman Hrabowski.
Yes.
And, you know, he talks about you like you are the cultured pearl of the Chesapeake. Or, I mean, he would obviously be much more savvy and smart about what his words to use for you. But I mean, he's the most incredible person that I've met, and is
likewise,
really an example to, you know, to so many of us. Where does that come from? How do you all know one another? What's your experience together?
You know, I met Doc when I was about 16 years old. I was a high school student over at Mervo, and the College Brown Foundation rented a van for us to take us out to UMBC. My College Brown advisor said, you know, this is going to be a real treat. You're going to meet this man named Freeman Hrabowski. And there were eight of us. She said, he's even taken the time. He's going to have lunch with you eight kids, right? We're from a trade school in East Baltimore. I had never been to Catonsville at that point in my life. And I went to lunch with him. We're sitting around the table. And in Freeman, you know, Doc fashion, he asked three questions. What are you reading? What's your SAT score? And what do you want to be when you grow up? And, you know, my answer was I wanted to be a Supreme Court justice. My SAT score at that time was, I think, 1300 or so. And I was reading the Richard Wright book, Black Boy. And he said, you know what? Come here. And he took me away from the table. And then we proceeded. He said, I want you to come to UMBC. If you come here, I will be a part of your life. I will help you. I will support you. I'll mentor you. And for me, that was a moment in my life when I critically needed somebody like him to affirm me. And from that, you know, I took him literally, and he has been a part of my life. I just talked to him last night. So we talk probably two or three times a week. But he's a.
How much of it do you think was your answers, and how much do you think is that sort of there's a natural glow or effervescence about you, whether you're live or on your online, people can feel it. You know, I wonder if he felt that day, or I wonder if it was, you know, your answers.
You know, I've asked him that question, and he says he saw me. What he saw in me was a big dreamer. And he said, some of the things I was saying during our lunch were such a big vision. And I mean, you know how tall I am, Damien. I'm 4'11". I think I may have been shorter then when I was 16. I was probably 4'8 or something. And he said that sort of audacity and like hope was contagious. And so he couldn't, you know, it was, he remembers himself like that. I'm no Freeman Hrabowski, but I'm just thankful he saw something in me and latched on to me.
What's some of your favorite things about Baltimore, Maryland?
You know, the some of the best things about Baltimore, one, are his people. We have some of the best people in Baltimore. We have people who, it's such a diverse community. Like, we have, like, all these neighborhoods that are made up of immigrants, like, from Italy and from Ireland and from Jamaica and from South America and from Africa. I mean, it's just, like, a nice blend of people who are charming and Southern, but not in a way that is, you know, in a way that's endearing and very endearing to you. Also, like, the water is beautiful. The seafoods are tremendous. And I love that we're like a city of neighborhoods where you can get to know your neighbors and get to like them and can really put down roots. And no one's asking you like what college you went to. They are asking what high school you went to, but
that's right, Merivale.
That's a different, yeah, Merivale. That's a different pretentiousness that I'm okay with.
I'm from Mount St. Joe, so as long as I say,
yeah, that's
Joe,
good. That's good, Mount St. Joe.
You know, everybody's
yeah.
gonna be fine with me.
Yeah, that's right.
Talk to me about your experience on the Port Covington project. At just sort of, I got a chance to work on the National Harbor, and I've got a chance to work with the Weller team. You know, those are classic moments where when you're done the whole thing, you almost don't know what to do with yourself. I admired the way you approached that work because you could see it live, or you could see it online. You got a sense that you were really enjoying every day. And anybody who knows, you know, public engagement knows you can't possibly be enjoying it that much. It's such a challenge to be in, and you were such a positive force in that. I don't know that we've even seen that kind of community building from a developer, master plan community developer standpoint. And I just love to get your thoughts on that whole experience.
You know, it was a chance of a lifetime. You know, I came over to the Port Covington team actually as a consultant. I was a lawyer, partnered a law firm, brought them in as a client, and about 3 months into it, came on board to lead the community benefits work in many respects. It was, when I went into community, I felt like I grew so much through that experience. And I know you said like you can't have, every day can't be fun. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I felt like it allowed for me to connect with people in South Baltimore that I'd never met, who cared so much about their neighborhoods. And when they pushed on me, I never felt like, oh, they're doing this for some nefarious reason. They were doing it because they cared so much about those neighborhoods and those people. And while we might disagree on like different terms and like whether this street should be red or this street should be blue, if we have the common ground of you love people and you love, you want to see them thrive and be the best they can be, I felt like I had gotten into my dream job. And so, you know, doing community organizing, when you're in a meeting and people are yelling, I actually couldn't hear the yell. All I could hear was like, I want a better school for my children. I want to make sure my children are safe. I want to make sure that my children are able to go to college. I don't want to have to move in order to get great things. Good things should happen in my community. I didn't take it personal. All I could hear was the hopes and dreams of people that have labored in the trenches for so long. And so for me, I felt it a blessing that I got to be the recipient of sometimes that heat and that fire. And I also felt really blessed that I could do something about it. And so I felt like I was living my whole life. You know, many times I was in their seat. So I would often say, I actually know more about what it is like to be in your seat than it's like to be in my seat. And so now that I'm in my seat, I know how to be empathetic to you and how to really drive change that you're talking about and not take it personal. Because none of it was personal. It was all about what they wanted for their community, and I can never be upset with that.
That's an incredible experience. Now, last question, I think, for you. And there's no particular rhyme or reason to this. Just a warning that you can get all, whatever you need to get in, you can get in on this one.
All right.
Talk to me about being at your level. And let's just say, you know, you're one of the top people and one of the top institutions in the world. It's a plateau moment for you. You're pulling as many people up with you as you can. Anybody that hangs around you or sees you can see that straight away. How do you make sure you're not sort of pulled down, almost like, you know, as a Gulliver, where you're just by everybody that you engage because of who you are, what you've done, where you obviously want to go? How do you seem to have that more as like wind at your back than you do anything pulling you down? Like for me, I always feel like if I get to a plateau point, like then I'm the Macy's Day Parade thing, and I got people holding on to me here and holding on to me here. And how do you stay so grounded and you know, not get bogged down by the incredible network you have? I don't know. Does that make sense of a question?
Yeah, no, I completely understand what you're saying. A couple of things that I keep as my principles. One, my family will never let me get off the ground, right? They just keep me grounded, keep me solid on the core. The other thing I think of is, you know, I'm a firm believer in like natural laws. Right. So, you know, Newton's third law says for, you know, every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And so if I'm doing things in a spirit of goodness, positive, if I'm giving, that comes back fivefold. And so I have like that weight. I get the wind in my back because I feel like the more goodness I put out there, the more I help people, the more I do what Dr. Hrabowski did for me, affirm people, make sure they're uplifted. I get it back. You know, Newton said it was equal. I think I get it back more. And so it allows for me to, you know, in many respects, I think, not feel the tug, but feel the great blessing it is to be in a position at this time to give. And, you know, if not me, you know, who? And so I don't take, you know, when I'm, you know, busy, or it's a blessing to live the life I do. There are many people that would give everything just to be one day in my shoes. And I don't, not for one moment do I take it for granted. And for me, you know, that makes me feel very positive and very blessed to just have this opportunity. So, you know, while others might say, you know, all the calls you have to take or the kids that contact you or this or that, it's a blessing. It is a blessing to be in that space. And that's how I view it. And that's why I don't complain about it.
I always thought people were saying that kind of stuff because, you know, it's great messaging. But I just never had the confidence to get outside my own head for so long that, you know, the idea of having the capacity to do all of that was impossible because I couldn't get out of my own head. And so I just admire, you know, from such an early age, you having the courage to just, you know, be confident of where you are. And that seems to open up so many more opportunities for so many other people.
No, it's a blessing. You do the same thing, Damien. You're not giving yourself enough credit. You are a champion and a champion rope or back there. But you lift up folks in our community so much. You have the tugs on you, and it seems to give you fire and make you bring joy. And that's what you do. You bring joy. I mean, nobody can say Damien Doherty doesn't bring joy to a place, to a meeting, to a whatever. And so for me, I feel like I'm in good company when I'm with you.
Thank you very much. I wish I could say that as articulately right back at you, but you know, I got the same for you.
Thank you.
Well, Alicia Wilson of the Johns Hopkins University, thank you so much for joining us on Center Maryland.
Thank you. This is a great way to end the week.
Thanks so much, Alicia.
You will make the change. You begin today. You will turn around and see the world.